parking in the last 5 years has really come to the forefront as one of the hottest investments in real estate. It's just such a specialized niche market.
You are now tuned in to the Valet Parking Podcast, where we talk with industry professionals and explore what it takes and what you can do to build and grow a successful parking business. If you'd like to learn more about who we are and what we do, visit us online at www.thevaletspot.com. Hi, this is Alistair with the Valet Spot, and on the other line, I have John Roy of J&L Parking. John is an investor and operator in the parking industry. He is a certified parking professional and also provides a parking broker service through his company, J&L Parking. Thanks for being on the phone with us today, John.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to talk a little bit about how you got into this. It sounded, from what I read on your bio, it sounded very entrepreneurial how you got into J&L Parking and kind of the real estate side of the parking industry. So how did that get started for you?
We got started in the dirt, and I mean that literally. When I went to the University of Notre Dame, we started buying old dilapidated homes and tearing them down and building them into parking lots for game day parking. And from there, that's how we really got started in the industry and how we fell in love with it and decided to pursue that as a career.
Well, what struck you about charging for parking instead of at the very beginning, instead of using it or instead of keeping the houses there? How did you kind of have that light bulb moment where you realized you could make money in the parking industry?
Well, we realized that they were charging anywhere from $10 to $30 per space per day, and it was just simply a matter of math, being able to cram these cars into these lots once we tore the houses down, and we would literally walk into the game after parking all the cars with anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000 cash in our pockets, and we'd be sitting there watching the game, trying to enjoy the game, knowing that we've got $10,000 cash in our pockets. So it was an interesting moment. But that was per game. And we did that, you know, for the 2 years I was there at Notre Dame and made a very good living at it. It allowed us to finish my degree there. And then from there was a launching pad into the parking industry.
Yeah. So where's it gone from there? What was the timeline? And maybe one of your other big successes early on in building J&L Parking?
Definitely. So we decided to look at other parking opportunities, and we've looked and, owned and operated a couple other lots, but we really had trouble finding anybody that was knowledgeable in the industry or to really find a marketplace where we could find and purchase and sell parking assets. So about 2.5 years ago, my partner and I decided to start J&L Parking, which focused on brokering, valuation, and consulting. And the first year was, a little bit slow. It took a little bit of time to get our name out there, but now it's really blown up. And I would say we're probably one of the largest parking operators, parking brokers and consultants in the country.
Are there any notable setbacks in the beginning or any maybe missteps that you remember?
Well, the hardest thing to get started is capital. We found that, with the parking industry, you really need a lot of capital or you need some qualified investors to back you up in order to get into the game. And that's what we see a lot of investors and even operators who want to become owners. That's the one thing that they struggle with is finding access to capital. And when we were first starting, it seemed like the most daunting thing in the world. But now that we understand the industry and are well connected with a lot of investors, it's actually the easiest piece of the puzzle, as long as you have experience and have a good site. Investors will be willing to invest in you. You have to have a good site and you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. And do you have any suggestions for at that beginning how you might find capital? What steps did you take that worked?
Definitely. When we started, there wasn't a very big source. A lot of it came from friends and families, and eventually talking to some local investors. But now it's a lot easier. Parking in the last I would say 5 years has really come to the forefront as one of the hottest investments in real estate. It's just such a specialized niche market. Very limited assets that we're seeing, especially in the CBD districts in the major cities. So now there's access to capital. For example, anybody that has a site that they potentially wanted to buy would have instant access to capital just through JNL parking. And there's various other sources, but we just tend to specialize in parking itself.
So that's interesting. Why have parking lots become so attractive? Why would someone consider and want to invest in a parking lot?
Well, it was that little secret that everybody found out about. And, you know, historically, parking has been associated with careers such as, I don't know, you could call it trash routes and, you know, just some of the lowlier, dirtier type of jobs. But suddenly Wall Street caught on and they found out that, hey, we don't have to be out there collecting a $5 bill every time somebody parks. But what we can actually do is what they call land bank, is buy the parking asset, let operators operate it. They can hold on to it for years until the value appreciates. Developer comes along and, you know, they buy it for development at huge premiums compared to what they purchased it at. Another thing they found out is that they're very steady, reliable cash flows, and that they also keep up with inflation. Our pricing power is instantaneous, unlike other commercial real estate where they're locked into certain rates for months, years on end. With parking, I mean, we could literally in 10 seconds change the rates if we want to.
Do you see parking lots as kind of a cash flow investment, or is it more of a realizing or appreciating gains? So does it pay off in the short run, or is it really for that large sellout at the end that you would get into it?
Not currently. You're going to be hard-pressed to find any type of parking assets in the current market where they produce lots of cash flow and you get an immediate payback period. What we're seeing are very steady type of payments, almost, you know, you could say kind of like a bond, where for a lot of passive investors are producing consistent and reliable cash flows. But if, let's say, they're only earning 4%, 5% on the parking investments, in some cities like San Francisco, Seattle, I mean, their lots are appreciating, you know, 15, 20% a year. So add in the 5% parking plus 15 to 20% land appreciation, and suddenly you've got a extremely attractive investment.
What's the typical timeline that maybe you advise investors to have, or that you see in the industry if you're looking at investing in real estate? Is this something where you expect to make a return within 10 years, 5 years, 20 years?
Typically, you could expect to have a longer term investment and get a quick return. I'm sorry, not a quick return, but a good return in, let's say, 7 to 10 years. What you're seeing now in parking, it's not uncommon to see an immediate return within 1 to 2 years, sometimes 3 years, where you know, somebody buys a lot and within 2-3 years, someone's knocking on their door looking to purchase it at a redevelopment site. So we're starting to see in the major CBD cities where purchase prices that seem ridiculous 2-3 years later are very conservative.
Well, what's the typical deal range for some of these purchases? Is there like a floor to getting started in the industry and maybe on the larger side, where are you seeing some of these deals go?
Yeah, there's not really a floor. The good thing about JNL is we deal with investors from all ranges. We've got a $20 million deal in Chicago right now, and then we're working on a smaller $900,000 deal in Delaware. So the range is really everywhere, but I would say to find a good profitable lot, from what we see, it's hard to find anything under $1 million where it's a good, reliable parking opportunity. Once in a while, we'll come across smaller lots that are very easy to operate or maybe are automated, you know, in the $500,000 range, but the returns typically aren't as great.
Do you see investors coming to you looking for help finding other investors? Do you kind of partner up investors, or do they typically come alone or already with all their funds for an investment?
You know, I joke around with my kids when they ask me what I do, and I tell them I'm in the business of introducing people to each other. And that's really what it is. You know, from the single operator who contacts me and says, you know, the owner might be willing to sell, to a higher end hedge fund who's got, you know, $30 to $50 million, and they're looking to partner up with some parking operators. So we're amazed at the different amounts of contacts that we make. But the key is really the introduction. What's your need? You contact us and we can put you in touch with the right people.
Are there any basics or and maybe like quick tips for getting into this type of industry or considering this type of business that maybe you can share?
Definitely. It's a lot easier if you're an existing operator right now, valet, anybody that's within the industry. And I'll tell you why. You know, some people think, well, I've got to have a lot of money. And that's not necessarily the case. You just really have to keep your eyes open and have a willingness and desire to advance your career and to one day own a lot. We had an example where there was an operator in Dallas last week. He contacted me and he said, "Hey, John, I finally got a call from the owner, and he said, you know, I've been doing such a great job with the lot. He's offering to sell it to me and replace the rent payments with debt payments." So, you know, that's a great example of anybody who's out there who is currently operating a lot. Start with the owners, the current owners, and just ask them. A lot of the times they'll say no, and you'll hear no 99 times. But on that 100th time, you'll hear yes, and that's just how you get started. It's one lot at a time, literally. But if you're not asking, if you're not out there hustling and trying to pound the pavement, as we say, and you know, making calls to people like J&L and saying, "Hey, what's out there? Can you help me? You know, I want to get into ownership." It's possible. It happens. You just have to really want it.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something that's interesting as well, which is for our listeners, most of them do operate lots or have a lot of experience in the parking industry. And I think, you know, you were also an operator, right? So what's the significance, or is there an advantage to doing that, and how might that help someone be successful in this industry?
Definitely. I mean, you know, I can walk into a lot and within 30 seconds be able to determine what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, what type of opportunities. And that's important. One of the things that we really like to do, and investors really, you know, seek us for, is that we'll go into an investment where they're maybe asking for a 5 cap. It could seem very pricey, but we'll go in there and look at the operations and determine that there's opportunities through either cost cutting or revenue maximization. And before we know it, you know, that 5 cap purchase is only a 7 cap purchase just from finding inefficiencies. But what I would say to a lot of the operators is that the owners may not come around a lot to the lots that they're operating, but when they do, they're very observant and they're able to tell whether you're doing a good job or not. We're currently in the process of brokering 3 deals in Chicago, 2 surface lots in a garage, and we walked with a potential buyer who was trying to determine whether to keep the current operator in place or not. And we walked the lots, and the snow hadn't been cleared properly. The roof on the rooftop at the garage wasn't cleared at all. You know, sloppy uniforms. And he made a decision within 30 seconds that the first thing he's going to do is replace the operator. So it's really pride of ownership, even if you don't own it, and maintaining a clean facility, clean appearances, and you know, always thinking, if somebody comes around right now, would they keep me or would they fire me?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And maybe a follow-up question to that is, and I know you mentioned some right there, but is there certain things that when you go visit a lot, are there certain specific things that say, hey, this lot isn't or worth that much, or these the operators aren't right? Or on the other side, are there certain things you can do to make a lot worth a lot more?
Absolutely. I would say cleanliness. You know, there's a lot of things that are within the control of the operator. There's things that are not. But the things that are within control are cleanliness. Is there trash on the lot? You know, are there abandoned vehicles, especially the equipment? If it's an automated lot, you know, very simple operation for an operator, is the machine up and working? If it's broken, when did it break? How did it break? Who's been contacted? When will it be repaired? If the operator can't answer those questions, we don't want them there. You know, the owners don't want them there. So they've got to be prepared. It's pride of ownership. Another thing is, if they're working a lot, we want to know, where did they park? Simple things like that. Did they park at the very front of the lot and took up the prime space, or did they park in the back? What's their appearance like? So you're always being interviewed for the next position, even whether you realize it or not. So, and there's a lot of subtle things that we'll look at when we walk into a lot. You know, is your employee in the booth, just sitting there with his, you know, hand in his chin, or reading a book and neglecting other customers when he should be helping them? Those are all the warning signs that we look at when we go into a lot.
Do you have any tips, I guess, for how operators might interact or communicate with the owners that might help that relationship? Is there any way that they can be proactive about that relationship with the owner?
Definitely. I'll tell you real quickly what owners really like in operators, and I'll kind of expand on that point. But owners want to be hands-off. They don't want to take calls. They don't want to be involved in the parking. They want to know that the revenues are being maximized at that lot, because if they are, it's driving the value of that overall lot higher. They love triple net leases. Okay. So anytime you can offer a competitive triple net lease for an owner where they don't have a lot of liability, they love that. So that's something that you want to look at. They love the maintenance of the lot. So if you maintain it, it's cleanly and there's not a lot of upkeep to it, they love that. But what I would say is that they want a relationship where they're hands off, but you're doing all the work and not bothering them at all. So the less work that they're involved in, the more you can maximize revenues at that lot, the better that relationship will be.
And going back to a triple net lease, can you explain exactly what a triple net lease is?
Sure. What they want is a lease that you sign in place where you're responsible for paying a set monthly amount, let's say an example, $10,000 every month. But in addition to that, you're going to be responsible for the property taxes and insurance. The owner really is just collecting a check every month. So it becomes a bond for them with a lot of upside for real estate. Now, the advantage to you is that you can usually, you know, when I say you, I mean the operator, is that a lot of times there's a lot more room for overall profit. Instead of sharing your profits, you're responsible for just a set amount every month, and anything that you generate above that is yours to keep. Especially if you sign, you know, 5 or 10 year term, and there's no liability for taxes significantly increasing, you could really make a lot of money if you enter into the right triple net lease.
Yeah, that makes sense. It reduces the risk for the investor, and it maximizes the upside for the person doing the work and operating the lot. That's what that sounds like.
Absolutely.
So we have a lot of people who are parking operators. Do you have any suggestions where those people might look to find these, or to hook up with these investors that are looking for operators? Are there events? Are there places that they can rub shoulders with these guys and get in touch with them?
I would say that there's two trade organizations that are great, where when we attend, we see a lot of owners, and it presents a lot of opportunity to network. And that's the National Parking Association and the what they call the PI, the Parking Industry Exposition. And they're held annually, so you get two events a year. And sometimes there's local events as well, but those are two great areas to start. You can also sign up through JNL to get some listing alerts and sign up with us. And, you know, we're very active in a lot of the different markets, and we do get owners who do need operators as well. So, but I would say the biggest thing is to get out there and network. And before you know it, you shake hands with a few people, and those people know some people. And before you know it, you'll you'll start to get to know people in the industry.
Right. Moving to where you kind of see the industry growing and the trends in the parking industry. As far as technology, what developments are you seeing there, and how is this changing parking?
Yeah, so with technology, there's two things that are happening right now, and that's automation, where they're replacing a lot of the operators at sites and going through an automated system. And the second has to do with payment and the payment options for consumers, specifically being able to pay via cell phone or, you know, hundreds of different parking apps that are out there.
Do you think that presents any opportunities for lot owners and operators to maximize the revenue of a lot?
Yes. If you take a smaller lot where you can automate it, it presents a good opportunity for an owner to reduce expenses. Now, what I would say to operators is that, you know, no matter what technology is out there right now, you can't replace a valet system. So, you know, anything to do with hotels or in heavy traffic areas. And what we see is that in these smaller lots, through automation, you might be able to fit, let's say, 20 cars. Through valet, you can squeeze in 50. So, you know, if you do it right and you're in a good area, I don't believe there's a threat to being replaced as far as a valet and the operator. But if you're certainly not doing a good job and not maximizing the revenues, and it's a lot easier to get replaced with a machine.
You mentioned automation, and I'm interested. Have you thought at all about, or do you see, what's the future like when potentially we have automated cars? I spoke with Donald Shoup not too long ago. I think you might know him. He's a professor at UCLA for urban planning, and I was talking to him about automated cars, and his response was the technology is already there. It's happening right now. How do you see parking lots changing as cars can park themselves?
Yeah, definitely. You know, Dr. Shoup is the godfather of parking, and he's very active in the industry and, you know, very knowledgeable. So we have the highest respect for him and his work. With the bottom line with automated cars right now is that it's at its infancy. I would even say that it's still, you know, it's basically still a theory. There's just, it hasn't advanced enough to really be a threat. When and if that ever happens, the bottom line is that it's still going to need a physical space to park in.
Mm.
Will technology change to accommodate those? Yes. And more than likely what will happen are automated garages where they pull into an elevator, the elevator navigates them up and down, and then automatically, you know, on a pallet parks them and then retrieves them. The owner retrieves them when they're ready to go out. That's what I see happening. But the bottom line is there's still a physical vehicle and they're still going to need a physical place to park.
Right. And that seems like a benefit almost because you get to maximize the parking space you have.
Correct. And robotics are nothing new in the world. They're just new to this country. So you have countries like Japan, specifically the UK and some European countries where robotic parking garages have been around a lot because they literally have run out of space. And what you're seeing is a lot of good companies, I can think of three or four specifically, who are starting to promote robotic parking garages. I think that there's one in West Hollywood. There's a couple going up in New York. I saw one in Philadelphia that was just amazing. So they are coming, but right now land is plentiful and it's going to take a while for that to develop.
Are there any other trends you're seeing? Like, where are we currently? Is this a buyer's market or is this a seller's market?
It is definitely a seller's market. So right now they hold all the keys and they are in a position where they can command a lot of money for their assets. So low cap rates right now, that's the current environment. Could that change in the future? Yes, but right now it's definitely a seller's market.
When did you see that turn? I imagine probably just a few years ago, you might have said it was a buyer's market. Is that true?
Definitely. When real estate collapsed in 2008, 2009, there was a lot of different parking opportunities to see a 10 cap on a parking acid wasn't uncommon. Now, you know, to find, you know, a 3-cap in Seattle on a surface lot is considered a home run. And a 1-cap in San Francisco, if you can even find it, is a home run. So, you know, the parking industry is definitely changing. And what I see happening is you have developers that are driving up the prices of these surface lots, trying to get development off the ground. And at one point, we're going to have a down cycle in real estate, and a lot of these lots that they purchased for really high prices are not going to be able to be developed. They're going to be sold off to the bank, and you're going to have the cycle renew itself where you have parking operators come in and buy them at rates that make sense for a parking asset until the market heats up again, and we'll have the same cycle continue.
When you say 1-cap and 10-cap, can you explain exactly what that means?
Correct. It's a capitalization rate. So it's basically your net income divided by the purchase price. So if you buy a lot at $100,000 and it's generating $10,000 of net income annually, your capitalization rate is 10%.
Got it. And just a personal question before we wrap this up, John, do you have any influences you might share, books, people, or things that help shape your philosophy and some of your drive in building JNL?
There is a very interesting book for anybody that, you know, getting started, wants to get any kind of motivation. It has nothing to do with parking. It has to do with bananas, believe it or not. But it's the story of a gentleman named Sam Sinuri, who immigrated to the country from Russia when he was 11 years old with his father. His father died, and he ended up, young Sam Sinuri at 11 years old, had to live on the streets in Selma, Alabama. And the story tells us the moment that young Sam is walking by a storefront and he sees a banana for the very first time. And it talks about the moment where the future is revealed to him. He has no idea what it is, but he just knows that that's his future. So he goes on to, you know, purchase some, what they call basically some imperfect bananas that nobody else wanted, sold them, made a profit of $54 at age of 15. And by the time he was 21, he was a millionaire. He ended up being the third richest man in the world at one time and built the largest banana empire in the world. So the book is called The Fish That Swallowed the Whale. That's a great book because it shows us that we don't have to be high tech. We don't have to have a high education. If a person, 11-year-old who can survive on the streets, can suddenly become one of the richest men in the world and build a banana empire, there's no reason why somebody living in America today with all the opportunities can become a parking expert and a parking mogul. So it's a great read. Like I said, nothing to do with parking, but a lot of the lessons that you'll see in that book have to do with parking.
Wow, thanks for sharing that. I'll definitely check that out. And finally, John, if people are interested in this and learning more, and how can they reach you, or how can they find you, and maybe a little bit about how can JNL help?
Yeah, definitely. You can go to jnlparking.com, and our contact information is there. You can sign up to get alerts. So anytime we find a parking asset, you'll be emailed and you'll have access to it. You know, we also, you know, work with parking operators. Actually, a lot of parking operators who contact us when the owner of the lot that they're operating wants to sell. And, you know, there's definitely some benefits where we work together. But also, you know, joining the National Parking Association, the IPI, and going to some of these trade shows, you'll see us around, and we'd love to meet you and talk and see how we can help you out.
Great. Well, John, thanks again for taking the time. I really appreciated hearing your side of the story about the parking industry.
It's a pleasure. And like I said, if somebody who buys dilapidated homes in South Bend, Indiana, of all places, and gets started in the parking industry can do it, there's a lot of other success stories out there that we're waiting to hear about.
Awesome. Well, thanks, John. I appreciate you being on the show. That was actually, I found that really interesting as a finance major myself and having some real estate background. It's interesting to especially hear how you got into it in the first place. That's a pretty cool story.
Great. Well, it's a pleasure. I look forward to hearing from some of the people on your site.
All right. Thanks, John.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Valet Parking Podcast. Enjoyed this episode? Have questions or suggestions? Or do you just love talking about valet podiums? Don't be shy. Give us a shout at podcast@thevaletspot.com or call us at 877-977-8733.